Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about the FTX collapse. Our story is by Jason Zweig of the Wall Street Journal and is entitled, Why the Investing Pros Were Such Suckers for FTX. In the spectacular collapse of FTX, the cryptocurrency exchange, millions of fingers already seem to be pointing at Sam Bankman-Fried, the frizzy-haired boy wonder who founded the firm, drove it to a valuation of $32 billion, and then took it into bankruptcy. Mr. Bankman-Fried, known as SBF, resigned as chief executive on November 11th, the day FTX filed for bankruptcy protection, and appointed a new CEO, John J. Ray III. SBF may be at the center of what went wrong, but he didn't act alone. Behind him lies a vast ecosystem of fantasy and fakery. It is called the investing business. If we're going to point fingers, let's be sure we aim at all the right targets. Hedge funds, venture capital firms, and other professional investors earn billions of dollars of fees for their purported skill in judging the potential of businesses and the integrity of their managers. Yet dozens of the world's leading investment firms, including Sequoia Capital, Singapore's state-owned investment company, Temasek, the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, SoftBank Group Corp., and hedge funds Third Point and Tiger Global, showered SBF with money. Despite their vaunted investing expertise, these firms all miss the many red flags fluttering high above FTX, and seldom in financial history have red flags been redder than this. On the Odd Lots podcast in April, Mr. Bankman-Fried didn't even bother to refute a question about whether a large part of his business might be a Ponzi scheme, also saying that it was completely reasonable to assume many crypto assets are worth zero. In a November 17 bankruptcy court filing, Mr. Ray said that none of the financial statements of Alameda Research, the affiliated trading firm 90% owned by Mr. Bankman-Fried that's at the heart of the scandal, had been audited. Nor, he stated, did FTX even maintain an accurate list of all its bank accounts. During a Zoom interview to raise money from Sequoia Capital, the renowned venture capital firm, Mr. Bankman-Fried, was surreptitiously playing a video game. Later, a profile of him commissioned by Sequoia bragged about the fact. It was as if daring to play League of Legends while asking people for hundreds of millions of dollars was proof of SBF's brilliance, and Sequoia's for funding him. In a letter to its investors about FTX on November 9, Sequoia said that the firm is in the business of taking risk and does extensive research and thorough diligence on every investment we make. In July, Brett Harrison, then president of FTX's U.S. arm, tweeted that it held customers' assets and bank accounts insured by the FDIC, according to the FDIC. After the regulator called the tweets false and misleading, Mr. Harrison apologized and deleted them. Any prospective institutional backer of FTX should have uncovered such basic flaws through even minimally adequate due diligence, says David Salem, a veteran asset manager and research partner at Sparkline Capital, an investment firm in New York. How could so many smart people be so blind to such bright red flags? I think the failure comes from what English poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge called the willing suspension of disbelief, that poetic faith, he wrote, has the potential to make the supernatural credible to every human being. Every bull market creates a willing suspension of disbelief, but the massive fee incentives of the investing business have turned the supernatural into the normal. Institutions managing hundreds of billions of dollars apiece are under constant pressure to achieve the annual returns of 8% or more they've conditioned their investors to expect. Venture capital firms and hedge funds have oceans of money to pour into any startup bigger than a teacup. Especially if you manage money for other people, the only thing a bull market inflates faster than your wealth is your ego. The more often you've been right about something, the more you'll believe you're right about everything. In the craze to hurl money at crypto, no one paused to ask, even if we're right, is this the best way to make money from being right? Back in April, Mr. Bankman-Fried mused on the Odd Lots podcast about how venture capitalists pick investments. It's worth quoting him at length. You get a bizarre, expletive-deleted process that does not look like the paragon of efficient markets that you might expect. Venture capitalists see what all their friends are chattering about, and their friends keep talking about this company, and they start FOMOing, feeling the fear of missing out, and then they find a way to get in on that. And all the while, you're like, how do we justify? Is this a good investment? Like, all the models are made up. You're valuing companies off of a model built by a person who owns the thing that's being sold. So, like, of course, the number is going to be up there between now and 2025, right? It's going to go up an arbitrary amount, and you can justify anything. Decades ago, Bob Dylan asked, how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, isn't just blowing in the wind. The answer is that when there's no limit to how much money professional investors can get paid to do so, there's no limit to how many times they can turn their heads. Well, this week there were a lot of contenders to being the biggest news out there. Of course, the missile of unknown but actually known origin that killed two Poles was big news, and could have been world-shaking news, but fortunately NATO decided to pause for just a second before launching an all-out war against Russia. NATO isn't going to stop funding the Ukrainian war to the tune of tens of billions of dollars every so often as it attempts to use the Ukrainian people as a proxy to deplete and eliminate the Russian geopolitical threat. No, why would they do that? I mean, it's not like the Ukrainian government has been saying that they're willing to make painful concessions to end the war. Oh wait, never mind that last part. There was also a delightful little piece of information disclosed this week that the FBI had more than one informant placed within the Proud Boys organization as well as the Oath Keepers. Oh, and funny thing, the FBI just happened to fail to disclose this to the defense for the members of those organizations who are on trial for conspiracy to commit sedition. Wow, what a strange coinkydink. I'm sure the files just got lost, you know, like all the files about Epstein's clients and the videos about Epstein's clients. Friends, these three stories have something in common, and you may not catch it right away, and you may just let it roll over you like water off a duck's back, or in this case, like toxic sludge off a duck's back. You may not have noticed, but all these stories' fundamental commonality is that they all revolve around gross incompetence, or worse, gross corruption at the highest levels of government. Now, I am not going to speak to the January 6th trial, at least not today, and I'm not going to weigh in today about the events in Eastern Europe, but I do want to speak a little bit on the curious little coincidences about the FTX scandal. Because let's make no mistake, this is a scandal, and a scandal of historic proportions, bigger than Enron by nearly a factor of three already. As stated in the Wall Street Journal article earlier, there not only was a lack of due diligence, but there was gross negligence. Institutional investors were just throwing money at Bankman-Fried because it was the thing to do, I suppose. And there were far more and far more troubling red flags than what the Wall Street Journal article published. The corrupt sister corporation to FTX, Alameda Research, which is how Bankman-Fried, you know, was able to move money so efficiently, was promising 15% returns with no downsides. 15% guaranteed returns. Only a sucker or a very greedy person or a person willing to do money laundering for drug dealers will take that bet. Nobody but nobody can guarantee 15% returns. Nobody can. Or there's the fact that Ellison, Bankman-Fried's girlfriend and the CEO of Alameda, said that she didn't really use math in her job. It's interesting. She doesn't use math. I could go on and on, but the simple fact of the matter is that there were more than enough warning signs. People deliberately chose not to heed the warning signs. Now, for private business, this is damning enough, but what about government regulators? Now, the antique media are out peddling the story that this is proof that crypto needs to be regulated. We need regulation, 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 and more regulation. But do we? The SEC has a staff of 4,500 people. It has broad power that clearly had at least some jurisdiction over some of Bankman-Fried's dealings. Considering that FTX was not some boiler room penny stock pump and dump, but a multi-billion dollar operation with over 100 subsidiary companies, and which was the sponsor of the Miami Heat Stadium and a Formula One team, it would stand to reason that somebody might maybe have wanted to at least see the books. But Bankman-Fried was clever. He consistently hired former members of the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. His girlfriend and partner in crime had family connections to SEC Chairman Gensler, and he gave tens of millions of dollars to the Democrat Party, and he even had one of his stated business goals as defeating Trump. Full disclosure, at least one higher-up at FTX did give substantial donations in the millions to Republicans, and Bankman-Fried gave about $250,000 to Republicans in this midterm. Compared to the $40 million, he gave the Dems that small potatoes, but the point is that when the money is flowing in, eyes flow away. Bankman-Fried gave everyone ample evidence that he was a fraud and that he was not to be trusted, but people who should have known better either let themselves be deceived or let others be deceived. And this goes back to the issue at issue. Government and regulatory incompetence at best and corruption at worst. The SEC has over 4,500 staff. The CFTC has nearly 700, and I'm sure that the FBI's white-collar division and the Secret Service's financial crimes division all have some oversight as well. Again, it would be plausible to say that we need more regulators and regulations if Some tiny offshore operation was skirting laws, staying on the safe side of legal while defrauding investors. But this was one of the biggest companies in the world, with one of the most public billionaires in the world. If all the regulatory agencies out there didn't know that crimes were being committed, they ought to have known. And if they did know and did nothing, then they should spend time in federal prison as accessories. The problem is not a lack of regulators or regulation. The problem is that the regulators are either incompetent or corrupt, or both, I suppose. And I know that this is a topic we've dealt with a lot over the past couple years, and I'm not trying to beat a dead horse. I'm trying to point out that we are living in a world where the people who have demonstrated over and over and over again that they are not able to do their job keep demanding more and more power to do the job. The people who failed to get Bernie Madoff, who failed to stop the housing bubble disaster, who basically have to wait for a recession to destroy the pyramid before they do anything, these are the people who are telling you, look, hey, guy. Look, hey, we just need more power. Just give us a bigger budget and more control over your life. And by the way, let's get rid of that dirty old paper money. Yucky. Ew. It'll all be fine. Just fine. Just let us have total control of your financial system. I don't believe them. I don't believe them. Not because I don't believe in regulation. I do. I believe strongly in a robust and powerful regulatory apparatus to protect investors from fraud. I believe that this is one of the reasonable functions of government. But giving more money and more power to proven failures is foolish. And let me prove it to you logically. Okay, so the counterargument is this. Luke, you're talking about failures, but not about all the successes, all the Ponzi schemes we catch early. Okay. So for instance, the SEC took 697 actions in fiscal year 2021. And some of those actions were over much smaller amounts of money, as in this case. So, okay, maybe that might make sense. Except it doesn't. Because what you would be saying is, Luke, our financial regulators aren't incompetent because look at all the crimes they catch that are so much smaller. Okay, well, now you're making an argument for corruption. If you can catch Joe Schmo for a fraud scheme in the millions, how can you not catch these guys? The argument actually cuts against you. Now, look, I'm sure there are a lot of really good, hardworking gumshoes who are serving as regulators. But there also seem to be a lot of people who just keep dropping the ball. I'm not sure whether it's incompetence or criminality, but it's not a good look. And frankly, it doesn't matter which it is, because it just goes to prove a basic point of the scriptures. Over and over and over again, the Bible warns us not to put our trust in princes, not to trust in mere mortals, to put our hope and confidence in human beings is stupid. Because whoever puts their trust in princes is sure to be disappointed. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of your life. If you're going to put your hope in government, you're trying to fill a bucket with no bottom. Yes, good and godly government is a blessing to the world, but good and godly government only lasts as long as the good and godly governors who make up such a government. And this nation has a definite dearth of the good and godly in government. We have a technocratic entrenched bureaucracy, sure. That's a far cry from good and godly government. So, maybe right now you're thinking, okay, Lukey Poo, what should we do then? Despair? Well, yes and no. You should surrender hope that anything in this world is truly yours to keep and can ever be safe and secure. You should despair of there being a truly godly government that endures forevermore. You should stop trusting that if only we get this guy elected or this colored wave at election time that it's all going to be fixed. It ain't. But we shouldn't despair of our true hope. We shouldn't fail to trust in Jesus. We should never cease to believe him, believe in him, and believe that when he returns, all will be made right. We live in a corrupt, broken, fallen, sinful, evil world. And God has given us government to help curtail and to constrain some of the worst aspects of fallen humanity, some of the worst and darkest demons of our personality. But that government can only ever be as good as the men who fill it. When you live in a nation full of corrupt, greedy, sinful people, do not be surprised when the government is corrupt, greedy, and sinful. We have more than ample evidence that that's what our government is. And while I have hope that a revival in this nation will come, I will always have hope in revival. My real hope is not in this world, but in Christ Jesus. I don't have to worry about him betraying me. I don't have to worry about him taking me in. I don't have to worry about him losing everything because I have hope that all the treasures I've stored up in heaven will never be stolen, rusted, or moth-eaten. Let's stop trusting in princes and hope in the Prince of Princes. I hope and pray we will, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another exciting episode of Truth and Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.